Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Well, welcome all you Geek Nationals. I am Vicky Barcelona, here with Joey Deez.
Hello.
Yeah.
And for, I don't know how we did this again, but we got BJ Shea, the show's namesake.
Two in a row.
That is right, and who knows, this could be a pattern.
I don't know if I'm okay with that or not, but what we are okay with is more geeky goodness. We're going to talk about everything we have missed, either that we took too long to watch or like that we finally got to watching or that we haven't had a chance to talk about, including Thor, Love, and Thunder. Yeah, a little late on that.
Oh, yeah.
Got a lot of shows like Harley Quinn, Sandman, some comic book talk. Maybe BJ's been reading some stuff. And
maybe.
That, you know, that fun
more.
But if you would like to get a hold of us, you can check out our website, bjgeeknation.com. You can also follow us, look for us, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app by searching for BJ Shea, BJ Shea's Geek Nation. You will find us.
Heck yeah.
You dork. I was just like, heck yeah.
You can find us.
I'm just picturing like a 90s like montage of like us dancing to like 90s geeky music, 8-bit music. Just,
oh, yeah.
Heck yeah.
Kind of like that Umbrella Academy thing they did, huh?
Oh my god.
Oh, that dance? Come on. That was awesome.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Wait a minute. Did you watch all of the last season of Umbrella Academy there, buddy?
I have watched the entire last season of Umbrella Academy.
Joey,
that's right.
You don't like time travel.
I hate time travel. It may have kind of accurately reflected my season of thoughts. No, it wasn't that bad.
Okay, I was curious. What did you think of Umbrella Academy?
You know, they do a lot of repeating, but I like the characters enough where it's not that boring for me. And, I love the genre. I'm a genre whore, as I like to say. pretty much if it's in sci-fi or fantasy, I'll watch it. And it hits 5 for me no matter what or what. And this show has been hitting 5 left and right. 5, 5, 5. It's
like
just
5 points?
Five
or do you
10.
Love 5? Okay.
Just, that good, I love it. It's in my genre. But it's not, you know, the perfect, oh, I'm going to go back and rewatch this kind of show for me. But I actually heard that BJ also finished it. And we never got his thoughts on it, I think, Vicky, because he was gone on hiatus as well.
All right. Well, I know we're going to talk comics later, and he's going to talk a little Umbrella Academy in the comics department. But what did you think about Umbrella Academy as a whole, and also knowing that we get one more season?
Yeah, is it a fact?
It is a fact. We are getting season 4.
Yes. I'm so happy about that.
It is the final season. They announced it like this is the last season.
So happy. But I will say this. Look, you know, Gerard Way did a great job with the comics. I have to say I'm a bigger fan of what Steve Blackman has done with the TV show. He took the insanity and made it a little bit more sane because I just reread the comics. And my mention with the comics really was just going to be, wow, I forgot how different they were. And I enjoy the comics. I mean, I really do. But I enjoy the show so much more. And maybe it's because of the fact that the acting is just so good. I think number 5 in the show is much more interesting than number 5 in the comics.
And
I think
a little more likable, even though he's kind of a douche.
Yeah, he is. But he, you know, this is where like when you have a writer is in charge of all of it. And the actors in a video, they will take the character and do different things and even tell the writer, you know what? No, we're not going to do that because that's not what my character would do. When a writer's writing a comic, he doesn't have that.
Mm-mm.
So I really believe that Aidan Gallagher did so much more with that character than even maybe Gerard Way could ever hope could be done. And I bet Gerard's probably very happy with what Aidan's done with number 5.
If you do go back and read the comics, which I do recommend you do, especially if you love the show, something that I've been saying since the very beginning, like BJ said, it's very, very different, but it's very confusing. So you definitely will have to read it at least twice. Because the problem with it is that all the characters look very similar in the comic, especially when they're little kids. So you're trying to figure out, okay, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, who's who? Okay, this is the one with this power. And then they all have first names, and then they all have code names. So they use them just like, oh, yeah, Kraken. Wait, which one's Kraken?
Yeah, especially when you feel really Ben should be Kraken.
Right? Ben
He's
is not Kraken. No, he is the horror.
Oh my God, that would confuse the crap out of me.
Exactly. So it took me, now that you've watched the show, I think it might be a little easier to follow. Relationship dynamics are much different in the comics or more, I want to say, not prevalent, but just they're deeper than what we see in the show. I'm glad they changed it. And it kind of goes back to the conversation we were having last week, the last episode when we talked about how some people were complaining that Lord of the Rings, it doesn't follow the books or whatever it is. Sometimes it just, you can't.
Yeah.
We have had so many sci-fi, fantasy, you know, comic book movies and shows adapted from previous materials. It doesn't make sense to have it on screen, and this is a perfect example of it. It still works on screen. You could still love the comic, the source material, and like, you don't have to be loyal to just one. You can be loyal like both. If you just happen to don't like it, that's totally fine too. But I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, there are some characters that were not in the comics. Like Lila was not ever in the comics, and Lila's mom was not in the comics. And I love both those characters. Klaus was nowhere near as interesting as Robert Sheehan had made that character. And you know, Joe, I can understand why maybe you're like, it's a five for you. This show is definitely a dysfunctional family show. I would say it's like This Is Us disguised as a quirky sci-fi show. Really, they are super dysfunctional. Or even better yet, maybe it's Shameless. That might even be a better analogy.
Shameless meets This Is Us meets with superpowers.
Yes, that's really what it is. And for me, boy, do I really love how they do that. And it was in season three, it really was illustrated, because what looked like a very perfect family in reality was not a perfect family. And the dysfunctional, horrible family actually had more love and really cared about each other more than you would think. Therefore, they were able to actually come and come to everybody's defense and come to the party and get it done. And I love that about it. I was actually, as soon as I saw season three, I said, I want to now binge the entire series. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did. I went from one all the way back to season three, right after the last episode of season three. I was motivated to see more. And then I said, I got to read the comics again. I just love the show, but I get it's not for everybody. But I'm happy that Joe at least gives it a five. That's cool.
Yeah, I think when I originally first reviewed it, because I reviewed, I think, first half of it at one point, because I'd only watched half. I kind of called it more of a soap opera fantasy sci-fi show, where it was kind of more based off of the arcs between the characters than it was the plot or anything. The plot really was just there to be there, and the characters are really what moved along everything as they, you know, kind of ruined their own lives over and over again. But it was a well-done one, and I think that's what I liked about it.
I'm very glad that we're getting a season four, and it's going to wrap everything up, because I swear at the end of every season, you get the big cliffhanger. And also, like, you get some answers that are answered, but then you have a lot more. I'm so confused. I'm like, I want to know what happens now.
I'll tell you this, and I can't really tell from the comics, but in the TV show, we know that Hargreaves is an alien. There's a scene, I don't know.
In the comics, we get we find that out pretty much right off the bat.
We do.
Yes.
You're right, yeah. And we do in the TV show as well.
It was almost like the same shot, the same scene from the comic translated to the screen.
What I don't seem to understand, what I don't remember from reading the comics, is it seems like he was seeding the world a little bit, and maybe I missed that from the comics. But there was a scene with his wife, and she said, "Look, you go without me." And then he releases this bottle of these little, you know, they look like little fireflies flying around, and it looked like there are ships taking off, and it did not look like they were taking off from Earth. So that's where it's like, wow, where did that scene happen? And I think it was season three where they showed us that scene of him and his wife dying and these ships taking off from the planet and these little firefly lights fly around and eventually then go into the moms of all of the Umbrella Academy kids.
Right.
It's interesting because they, you know, Steve Blackman at the end of the comic of the Oblivion. Oblivion?
Hotel Oblivion.
Hotel Oblivion, yes. We just meet the Sparrow Academy. We don't know very much about them at all. So I love that in season three, I don't know if they got Gerard Way to tell them more, but they really fleshed out the Sparrow Academy more so than the comic ever did. So, you know, I don't know what Gerard Way is going to do, because there are some differences with the characters from the comic in Sparrow Academy as opposed to what we saw. There was no Ben in the Sparrow Academy in the comics. That's true.
Yeah, I feel like he might have died a little older, I think, than he kind of died in the show. I think he might have still been like a late like maybe 19, 20.
And he only showed up with Klaus for a little bit. Like there weren't many scenes where Ben was haunting Klaus. But there was a scene where Ben was telling Klaus to get his act together. But I love that the TV show ended up having Ben hang out for a long time. And it's well done. And the comic is great. I love what they did with the TV show. Very similar to how, mm-hmm. The Walking Dead went their own way in a lot of different ways than the comic. And still both really good pieces of work. And I would, like Vicky said, you know what? If you love Umbrella Academy, the comics are worth a read just so you can see the weird, crazy road they go down. I mean, you could see where they go, wow, they had to edit out a lot. How did they get from here to here because of just the insanity that Gerard Way put on those pages?
And as of last year-ish, Gerard Way revealed that Volume 4 will be called the Umbrella Academy Sparrow Academy for the comics. But we have not heard when it's going to be released to print yet, or if the main plot line is the season like 3 of the show or not.
I'm interested in a character who actually has the ability. It's the reverse rumor where she says she doesn't believe what you say. And then it basically means that it's not true anymore. Like she has the ability to make things not true.
Okay.
It was a weird thing where she had, because Vanya in the comics is in a wheelchair because she basically just had a traumatic injury and she couldn't walk. And then Vanya had said, I can't walk. And then the Sparrow Academy person said, I don't believe that. And then the next thing you know, here she is. She goes, I can get out of the chair. I can walk. I'm like, okay. That was the only time, at least in the comics, we saw this one Sparrow power. We saw Christopher the Cube. I didn't see him do much in the comics. We saw the dude that had the ability to, when you hurt him, you basically hurt yourself. But he's a huge blob gray thing. He doesn't even look like a human in the comics. And I don't know if there's Gravity Girl. Don't know if she's there. Number one definitely is a real strong number one looking guy. Almost looks just like Luther, actually. So, I mean, but
Luther, he is also a number one.
Yeah, before Luther was all aped out, and also Luther in the comics is much more like just insanely aped out. I mean, he's got this little, it looks like somebody put a little head on a giant ape body. It's just so insane looking.
I mean, and sometimes they kind of did that in the show, but I feel like if they would have gone any more exaggerated, it would have looked very off-putting and not in a good way.
Yeah, so there you go. So the comics are, I'm looking forward to, the fourth series in the comics. That's cool.
I realize that a lot of what we're going to be talking about today is about dysfunctional families.
Yes, what else we got?
Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Hey.
I'm interested to hear what you guys think about this.
You finally watched it.
Yes.
I think you and I were the last ones to watch it, and I watched it last night with a roommate who's never seen a single Thor movie, apparently.
Oh, wow.
And I will say she's, she likes some nerdy stuff, but she's not like us. She loved it.
Wow.
She thought it was so much fun. It was silly. It was a little creepy at times. Like, it was just all around a good time. And I don't disagree with her.
Oh, I'm not surprised. You liked it.
I really liked it.
I was expecting
to like hate it on it, like maybe give it a 7 or a 6 based on what everyone was saying. But I was cackling like an idiot. It was just chill and fun. You kind of let your mind go. Like, don't be too serious about it, I think, is how I went into it. And that's probably why I liked it as much as I did.
Joey Deez, how about you? Thor, Love, and Thunder, because I have some friends of mine. Most people thought it was okay, but when my one friend, Josh from the Board Game Alliance, you know him, compared it to, he said it was Wonder Woman 84 all over again. And boy, oh boy, I mean, both Josh and I did not like that movie.
Josh, I love you, but calm down.
It definitely was not as bad as Wonder Woman 84. I think I originally reviewed it a month or two ago, and I believe I gave it a 6. And I think that's probably about right. Maybe a 6.5 on a good day. I feel like that movie had a lot more to offer than it gave, mostly because you got Christian Bale to play one of the most badass god hunters, and he's not even in the movie, and I'm not very happy about that. But besides that, I thought, that was about average.
Like, I mean, yes, you have a big named actor like Christian Bale, you expect to see a little bit more of him, but it made sense to why you don't see him that much, because he travels in the shadows, so he's supposed to be like the boogeyman in my head.
Yeah,
especially with the children.
You just hear the Gore the God Butcher, and you think this guy's going to butcher some gods, and it's more God the I don't show up except to capture a child
and stab you in the neck.
Yeah, so
yeah, it's not that it's a plot hole so much as it's just people really wanted to see more of that character. Like,
right.
He's the big bad guy. Let's see him. Let's have him be on screen and have interaction with. That's what people were complaining about. I think here's the thing, Vicky. You watch Our Flag Means Death, right?
Yes.
Of course. And you know, you love Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
And here, and you and I think, and I'm going to just say this, we are biased with Taika Waititi. There's nothing he can do. Jojo Rabbit, all this. There's just nothing that Taika can do that I will not like. And I have to admit that I have a bias. And that's why watching that movie, I enjoyed it, because it's Taika. It's complete Taika. Now, I will say this. It feels like Taika is like, all right, here's my first Marvel movie with Ragnarok, and he wasn't as silly, but he had great Taika-like scenes, but there was also enough Marvel scenes in there. This fourth one, I think Taika was like, I'm going to be Taika a lot, and less Marvel-like scenes, and I think that's the big problem for the Marvel fans, is that too much Taika, not enough Marvel, whereas there was a good balance of Taika-Marvel with Thor Ragnarok, and that's it. But if you love Taika, what you're going to care? I don't care. You give me all Taika. I don't care. And so,
like, I went into this like with lowered expectations, expecting to be a little bit more judgmental on it. And so once I started laughing and just chilling with it, I was like, oh, this sets you into a comfortable place. And that could be my bias for sure. I think the problem is with a lot of these movies and shows is that you now have to balance, like, people are getting superhero fatigue. So it's like, okay, do I want to be more superhero-y, Marvel-y? Do I want to be more of my own genre? Which we're seeing with a lot of these shows that are kind of turning into, like, for example, She-Hulk. You know, you got a little bit of that breaking the fourth wall, sitcom-y vibe. You get a little different from each of these shows. Some more serious, some more comedic. So where do you draw, like, I feel like as a director, a producer, writer, whatever, like, you're trying to find that weird middle ground. Like, what is it that we're trying to make, but also include the Marvel elements so it keeps everyone satisfied, and you can't always win.
Yeah, this I was gonna say this one just felt like it was aimed at a younger audience. I don't know if that's a bad thing or not, because there are a lot of kids, and there are a lot of the director's kids, and there's a lot of Chris's kids, and there were some scenes where I was like, you're really going to use your kids for this, and you're giving them all the Thor power? That's not something you can be able to do.
I'm not going to lie, though. That gave me chills, and I was so excited, especially when you're seeing all these actors. So you got, like, your Tony Starks, your all these characters and actors that are no longer going to be in future projects. So to kind of pave way for, like, a new generation. But also, you are correct in that this is aimed for a younger audience, because my friend, the entire time we're watching this, she's like, my 9-year-old son would absolutely love this. The part where all the kids are fighting, she's like, he would be losing his mind right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, yeah, you're not wrong. It is definitely for more of a younger audience. It still had a little bit of the scary elements, which luckily he's like 9, so he loves scary, which she's like, that's his new favorite character is going to be the God Butcher, which he's a weird kid, but I love him. he's my nephew. I call him my nephew. But yeah, you know what? I think this is starting to try to get in a whole new generation. Was there a lot of... what's that word?
Begins with an A. Does it have an O in it?
Nepotism.
Oh, that's the word.
I was going to say nepotism. Is there a nepotism in this movie? Hell yeah, there is. Oh, did I still have fun? Yeah, it was fun. I was laughing.
It's going to happen.
It's got the good feels. Like, I didn't expect myself to laugh as much as I did and then to almost cry at the end of it. Like, yeah, I was just about there. It had a little bit of everything. So I appreciate it. And just for context, because I gotta be transparent, Wonder Woman 1984 got 58 on the tomato meter, 73 audience score. Thor Love and Thunder, 64% on the tomato meter, and 77% on the audience score. So pretty close, although Thor Love and Thunder did get higher scores.
Yeah, I think the thing that really alienated the Thor fans was the fact that the MacGuffins that were in the movie really took away from Marvel's story arcs. And because it had to do with, you know, really catering to kids, people were like, why do we have to do both? Can we do one or the other and not screw it? Like, first, it's having a God-wishing device that a character can just walk in and get to so easily after you have your whole Thanos arc really makes the fans go, well, this is not believable. Like, I don't like this. And then to also make your movie for kids, which I also think is a good idea with Thor. I think it actually played well. Yeah, I can understand why those two things brought it down for people. But I think to your point, it really would have been a very, very enjoyable movie had they just done a little bit more work on those two parts, because you did enjoy it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like with some of these movies, and I don't know, maybe I would have had higher expectations had I not heard everyone else's review, much like I did with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I went in with like high expectations. I went in like literally the day it came out or the second day it came out, not hearing any spoilers or anything, and I was, I think, whelmed would be, like, because I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it either. Yeah. I was whelmed.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoyed this one, and it was a fun movie. Is it, like, a must-watch again? I think I would with, like, the nephews and stuff, but it definitely was not a puzzle piece movie. Like, we didn't need this movie for anything.
No.
It didn't connect to anything. And I feel like my only thing I didn't really care for in this entire movie, if I'm being honest, is the whole Guardians of the Galaxy. Felt like there's almost too much Guardians of the Galaxy at the beginning. We didn't really need all that.
That was a catch grab or a cash grab. I mean, we all know that. They were in there for like 5 minutes and then they were like, we're out.
It's either have them in more or have them in a lot less.
Yeah, exactly.
In my opinion. That was my only complaint.
Yeah, BJ, did you think the same thing about the movie over you? You enjoyed it, but not exactly what it could have been?
Well, because, as I said, I like Taika Waititi, so I get it. I get that because it was a lot more Taika and a lot less Marvel, and that's really, really the bottom line in my brain. But again, I like Taika Waititi. If I didn't like that director so much, maybe I'd be pissed, because I do like my Marvel stuff too. Yeah, this is a filler movie, but it's a fun movie. Thor's not my favorite character until actually Ragnarok. I've never been a big Thor fan with the comics. I wasn't super Thor fan with Thor 1 and Thor 2. They were okay for me.
Honestly, but filler movies too, like, in a different way. It's like, crap, we need to get the Avengers out. Let's go. Let's cut another movie
You definitely needed to tell the story of Thor because he's definitely an Avenger. So I get that it had to happen. But it's just like that character doesn't do much for me. Mm-hmm. And I love what Taika did with the character and bringing in the Hulk and with Ragnarok and all that. And that was a lot of fun. And Taika does actually, in his quirky way, like to also touch the feels, which, again, some people don't want to go feel the feels in a movie, unless it's like, hey, cap on your left. That's about as many feels as anybody wants to have to experience. But Tyke is not that way. And, with Our Flag Means Death, this, Vicky.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many feels in that show, but it's quirky feels. You're laughing. You're going, this is the dumbest thing. These people are so weird. Next thing you know, going, whoa, where'd all these feels come from? That's Tyke's specialty, if you ask me. He did it with Jojo Rabbit, where you're like, whoa. I mean, Scarlett Johansson was tremendous in that movie, and I didn't expect that. And next thing you know, like, oh my God, all these feels, even though this movie has got his imaginary friend is Hitler. That's what Taika does. I mean, he just does something ludicrous, and next thing you know, you're feeling a ton. Mm-hmm. And I love that he did that with the Marvel movie. I can't think of the director who she was that did The Eternals, but people had a problem with that movie. But if you watch her movies, you go, well, that's what she's about. And I love that Marvel, at least, is doing that. They're giving us different vibes of movies. It's not just the same damn movie every time with different people. These different directors are giving their own flavor, and yeah, they're not for everybody, but I love the buffet of flavors that Marvel's giving us, and this is just another one on the buffet.
So I think I give it a 6.5. What did you guys give it out of 10 overall?
I give it like an 8.
Okay.
I think I want to say like a B minus to a B.
Okay.
Like, was it the greatest Marvel movie of all time? No, like, it's not up there, but I loved it way more than Multiverse of Madness, and I still can't get the screaming goats out of my head. So maybe I'll give it an 8.5, because that was just so stupidly hilarious. I was just like, are you kidding me?
And, also, Joey, your mom liked that movie a lot, too, which is why it's interesting. People that aren't, like, superhero fans and aren't deep like that, like Vicky's friend, like mom, she really liked, that's what I was looking at, going, okay, she really liked this movie. That means at least he did the job for somebody. So I'm going to give it a 7.5 because of that.
Sure.
I know it wasn't as good as Ragnarok, and I do believe it because he got too Taika. He got a little too Taika. But again, I love Taika. But, hey, listen, not everybody loves Taika. So 7.5 for me.
Yeah, I think if you could hit that range, that's fine. Because, again, like you said, it's a movie that's not going to play a major role in the upcoming, storylines.
No.
So the fact that they can still capture you. And, the scenes with Christian Bale, the CGI, they're beautifully done. So I did enjoy a lot of it. It's just that unfortunate kind of...
I love the concept, too, because gods are a-holes. And Russell Crowe, I have to say, we didn't give him some love, but the way he portrayed Zeus was fantastic. And for you Ted Lasso fans, you probably didn't recognize him, but you don't know, but Brett Goldstein is Hercules, who has been known for Ted Lasso. So
it's
that's exciting to see how that's going to work out.
He kind of looked like my brother, not the baby brother, that's three, but like I have another brother. Yeah, and when he saw him, like, oh my God, I want him to dress up as him because he looks very similar to him.
Well, he's, you know, anyone, I love Brett. I just love his work in Ted Lasso. And he's done some other stuff too. He's been on Doctor Who and stuff, you know. Oh. And so I'm interested to see, like, okay, how's Hercules going to be? Is he going to be basically just, you know, Roy Kent? He's going to be Roy Kent with, like, you know, really fancy looking, like, Greek clothes, whatever. All right.
It's funny that we bring up Hercules because in my head, when I think of Hercules, you have two versions of Hercules. You have Disney's animated Hercules from the 90s. And then my head, I think of Hercules from one episode in season one of Harley Quinn. He was such a tool, like gross, skeevy, like bad guy. And I bring that up too because Harley Quinn, the new season, I believe it's all out. And I binged it all. I was behind, way behind BJ, and I binged it all just like I wanted.
Oh, good for you. About damn time.
Oh, it is so good.
I know. It's the writing and acting on that show and the cast is so darn good. And you know what, Vicky, you're right. It's, again, dysfunctional families. It's a brilliant show, which, yeah, if you're in the canon at all, you're probably going to hate what they're doing with the Harley Quinn character.
Oh, they're just like She-Hulk, where they, in one episode, they do make fun of, like, actually, I do not like this. This isn't canon. People who hate on things just to hate on things.
This is definitely a parody of the entire DC universe, and it is so good. It is so good. You turned me on to this show, and I was like, I'm not going to watch a cartoon about Harley Quinn. I never liked Batman that much, really. And then here it is, whatever. Somebody that was created on an animated cartoon. She's not even part of the comic book history.
And then a lot
of
people.
All my reasons.
Like, you have Harley Quinn as Margot Robbie playing Harley Quinn. You already got that version. Like, how is this version going to be any better or whatever?
Oh, man.
And you liked it.
Ron Funches and J.B. Smoove and
Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk is who plays two roles in this, and Lake Bell, who I love. Lake Bell, God, she's so talented. And boy, they three seasons, and I still want to see like where this is going to go. And the guy, by the way, also Batman, and Giancarlo Esposito,
Lex Luthor.
I mean? Playing as Lex Luthor. I mean, oh my gosh. Even Bane. Oh, Bane is fantastic. He's just complaining about a wedding gift the entire season.
Bane, any scene that Bane is in steals the show.
Yeah, it really is. Oh my gosh. And even the portrayal of Nightwing and Batgirl and the new Robin.
Catwoman.
Oh God. Oh yeah, Catwoman's fantastic. You're right. Oh gosh, she's really good. The I guess Sanaa Lathan, I think her name is. Sanaa, if I'm saying, I hope I'm saying your name right, Sanaa, but she's so good. And even the guy that plays Batman. I mean, in the whole storyline with Harley Quinn and Batman, and I just love what they do with this show, and it's really good, and it hits you in the feels. You turn around and you go, I didn't expect to feel stuff with this silly cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's so good. And it's on HBO Max, by the way, if you haven't seen all three seasons.
You haven't watched any yet, Joe, have you?
I have not.
What do I have to do to convince you?
I have no idea.
I'm trying to get him to watch Lower Decks because it's at least by the same guys that did Rick and Morty. So I was like, Joe, it's the Rick and Morty people, and they love Star Trek, and so they're doing a whole Star Trek show. And Joey hasn't quite got there yet.
There's a lot of television out right now. There's so much good stuff out there. So to kind of try to balance your time, like, what am I going to put my time into? And I don't blame you, Joe. There's a lot.
It's been tough just to me to find, you know, catch up on Game of Thrones, Andor, and Lord of the Rings. It's like, I got like 9 hours of television I have to watch a week now.
And Vicky, I forgot. I want to bring this up. I forgot that the two sisters were actually like hanging with each other. I forgot about Kaylee and her sister Brianna, who played Batgirl.
Yes. And it's funny because they have very similar tones to their voice. So when they talk, you're like, oh, wait. You do see a little bit more humanity into Harley. According to IMDb, it looks like we're getting a season 4, so I'm holding them to it. It's supposed to be 2023.
I mean, look at HBO. You need good shows. I mean, I don't know how well it's received. I feel like critically, there's just no way you can put this show down. It's so well done on so many levels.
Well, that and like, I mean, the WB hasn't been doing great.
Nope.
I think they're going to probably put all their money into Black Adam. And they need to keep Harley Quinn and Peacemaker.
Well, when you say the WB, you're not talking about the network, HBO.
I meant DC in general is what I meant. Sorry. But like when it comes to DC, they don't always make the best decisions when it comes to their stuff on screen, whether, you know, small screen, big screen.
Well, Harley Quinn and Doom Patrol are two of the two fantastic shows that probably... Yeah. Oh, forgot about Peacemaker. You're absolutely right. I mean, Brendan Fraser's career, people have said, has just been revitalized because of his work on Doom Patrol. It shows that a lot of people don't know. Even geeks, sometimes you go, I don't know, I haven't watched those shows. They are such gems. Teen Titans, Titans is a fun show on HBO. DC on HBO kicks ass. It is as good as anything that Marvel has done, if you ask me, their shows. And Marvel's done some good shows on Disney Plus, but I still think, man, Doom Patrol and Harley Quinn are just even better than what Marvel's done on some of their shows.
I have a theory that there are certain certain collaborations that should no longer happen because it's the kiss of death. And not so much, okay, not every single time, but it doesn't do the greatest. So CW and DC maybe need to knock it off. Like, not all your stuff's great, and even lately it's been eh. Knock it off. Just put all your stuff on HBO and make the HBO people take care of it because they've been doing a great job. Another one would be anything to do with Marvel and FX. You've not been doing good
there,
buddy.
So you didn't think Legion was good, huh?
It was fine. I liked Legion. Like, I liked it then, but it kind of got too much. And I don't know. It wasn't their best work. They also did another one, and I'm blanking. I think it's called like Hellstrom. I watched the first season. It was...
I don't even know if I know that one.
It was supposed to be like a Marvel Mutiny show or whatever before I think even the Fox merger, like Disney bought Fox.
Oh, wow.
And it was supposed to be about demons and stuff like that. And it just felt kind of cringe, very forced. And I forced myself to watch it. They had some great actors and even some really good actors that appeared later on. Like, the idea behind it was kind of cool, but it was cringe. And it didn't even get a season two. They haven't been doing great. They don't have the best track record. So
it's tough. And with network television it's really, really hard. We haven't mentioned it, but I will because I've watched it. Because there's a lot of Quantum Leap fans out there and people are just they're just dogging on that show because it's a network show. You can and you're not going to get the great quality actors, really, unless it's accidental. And I have to say, Quantum Leap, I watched the first episode. My wife kind of liked it. I said, all right, we'll see what the next one's going to be. I haven't watched episode two yet. And that tells you something. It's just like, and so network television is having a hard time keeping up, at least in the world of fantasy, sci-fi, superhero stuff. It's hard for them to keep up. And the CW is essentially a network, network, and it's just hard for them. I give them credit. They've been able to, at least, because of them, Arrow and Flash did create a lot of interest in DC characters. So give them credit for that. But again, I'm not the target.
No.
I'm not a teenage young woman. So I can't put them down because every one of their shows does seem to be geared at a young woman.
Okay. My thing was too, like, how successful have they been recently, though? Because I feel like I've been hearing about a lot of cancellations, a lot of issues. But, maybe they'll pull out something like, I think there was a new show that just came out, too, like a DC character, Moon something girl. I don't know.
Oh, Stargirl.
Stargirl.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another CW show. I had no idea, and I am on the internet way too much.
Did it get canceled, Stargirl?
No, I think it just came out like a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, how did I not even hear about it?
Yeah, it's been on. I've seen some. It might even be like season two-ish or something. And actually, is Joel McHale, I think? Is he part of that?
I think so.
Yeah, and so it's intriguing. If I had room on my docket of shows to watch, I'd put it in there. But I still have to fit in The Imperfects, which I hear is a great show on Netflix. And that's the other problem. The other problem is that, you got shows coming on Netflix that are just like, okay. And you'll probably be talking about this soon, but Paper Girls. I mean, it's hard to watch Netflix network shows when you have these great streaming shows. So I got to get to The Imperfects. The people tell me it's very quirky and you'll get a Misfits vibe, which, of course, I love Misfits. So
the roommate has watched that and she says that I'm going to love it. She says it's amazing.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. Once I get done with Paper Girls, I think I'm going to introduce my daughter and myself. That'll be our TV watching thing.
But you did mention Netflix, and I do want to get to a show that we got a surprise 11th episode on, and it's one of those, like, I didn't catch the 11th episode, Sandman. And last time we talked, did we all talk about let's go for the 1 through 10. Did we all watch it?
I watched 2 episodes.
Okay. Yeah,
my wife watched 1 episode.
Okay.
And so, apparently, mother like son, no thank you.
I don't really see this being your show.
Yeah, and this isn't to say anything bad about the show, but I was so bored. I was watching it. I'm like, this is just not for me kind of a thing.
I enjoyed the show, but I will say, like, Morpheus, who's the Sandman, you would think of him as, like, the sexy goth guy that is like, oh, you're very emo, but it's sexy. And I don't know if it's because I was an emo kid in high school 15 plus years ago. Oh, God. And now I'm an adult. That some of the stuff he says and how moody he is, I'm like, kid, grow up. Like, knock it off. Like, I get you're this powerful being, but you need to, like, stop being so full of yourself and get with it. However, that being said, I would love for you to dress up as Morpheus.
I
feel like you have a similar face. Like, and I feel like with, like, the wig and the black jacket, can you please do that?
I need to get a wig and some makeup, and I'd probably be able to nail it. And a long jacket.
Can I get these stuff? And will you do it? Okay.
Okay, fine. Maybe.
Vicky, thank you for reminding me, because I have not finished the 11th episode. I keep forgetting to watch it. I've watched halfway through. Oh my gosh! I gotta make a note, because I don't know what happened. I watched and then I stopped watching it and keep forgetting that I haven't finished it. Well, so I haven't finished the 11th episode completely.
For me, what happened was I downloaded them all to my iPad when we had a flight we had to catch. So I watched them all on the flight there and on the flight back, and I didn't download the 11th episode because it wasn't out yet.
Oh, yes.
So I never got to watch that last one. But overall, it was silly. It was fun. It's funny because I feel like I didn't bond with the main character because of the reasons I already said, but you think the main character is who you're supposed to really connect with. And but I really love the whole cast as a whole.
And this is what I love about Neil Gaiman, mm-hmm. because you're right, Vicky. Normally you go, okay, I need to connect with the main character, and intentionally Neil Gaiman doesn't want you to. He is your host. That is that. Basically, he's like Rod Serling of the Twilight Zone. And that's what people didn't realize, is this becomes an anthology. It's funny how Sandman started, even in the comic book world, and then he eventually found his footing, and Neil Gaiman started saying, I'm going to just write these anthologies about these people, these regular people doing whatever they're doing, and the Sandman is somehow involved in their lives. Regular people who all of a sudden are now extraordinary, you know, for whatever reason. And also the sibling rivalry that he mm-hmm. has, and the relationship he'll have with Lucifer Morningstar. It really isn't so much about him, but the people around him, including, you know, including his new crow companion, and, mm-hmm. you know, and the jack-o'-lantern dude, and I'm blanking on everybody's
names. But it was Mark Hamill.
Yeah, and so you got Patton Oswalt and Mark Hamill voicing those characters, and I know it's horrible that I don't know the names of these characters. But I mean, it's just it's so wonderful to see the comics, because I just walked by a comic book store. It's been 30 years, because they have a 30th anniversary edition that comic stores have come out with, since people were like, hey, I love the Sandman, I wonder if I can get the comic. And so DC reissued all of them with these beautiful, looks like beautiful copies. I used to have hardbound copies of this. I went crazy for it, and then I ended up giving it to a friend. It's so great to see it played out on the screen. I really loved what they did. And Joey, you're right. It's very boring. It's another one where it's about the human condition. Mm-hmm. It's about humanity. And also Neil Gaiman has a thing with humanity's love of gods, and why do you love gods that are more effed up than we are? And you saw it with his American Gods show, mm-hmm. and Sandman predated that, and it's basically because they're all gods. They're gods of us, really, but are they, or it's just our emotions are the gods of us? I love just where this show goes, but if you're not that kind of person where you like to do that, you're going to go, it's boring.
Oh, yeah. Mark Hamill plays Merv Pumpkinhead. And,
yeah, Merv Pumpkinhead, so good.
Patton Oswalt does Matthew the Raven, which
Matthew,
I love.
Yes.
Because you have all these beautiful British accents, and then you have, not saying Patton Oswalt's voice isn't amazing, because it is, but it just feels like out of place in a good way. Like, it's supposed to be that way.
And you want to see the example of great acting and, you know, bad writing, and great acting and good writing. The actor who plays Desire, and if I can,
Mason Alexander Park.
There you go. Mason Alexander Park it was in the first episode, and I would imagine is part of the cast of Quantum Leap.
Mm-hmm.
And Mason Alexander Park is terrific as Desire. My God, what a great performance. Mason Alexander Park, not given a lot to work with in Quantum Leap. Look, you got to work. I get it. You're a performer. You got to work where they're going to pay you. And look, it's a steady gig. Why not? But I just but having just seen Mason's amazing performance in Sandman, and then all of a sudden watching this, you know, what they gave Mason to work with in Quantum Leap, you're like, it's really not Mason's fault if that show doesn't do well. I know Mason's trying their best, but you know, it's just
Quantum Leap aside, I do have a feeling that we are going to see a lot of Mason Alexander Park. Like, I feel like they have a very bright future ahead of them. It's just my gut feeling. They are just phenomenal, like, on screen. Like, their presence just super, like, I don't know if it's just the way they filmed it, but just to see how Desire is and how they move and everything, I'm like, oh, dang, okay.
And of course, you know, people again complaining like, why do they got to change the characters and why can't they be all? And, you know, I can't think of a better death, you know, you know, Kirby Howell Baptiste. Yes, death was not African-American in the book. OK, take it easy. Yet, boy, did Kirby kill it. She killed it in that episode with her basically bringing people to the next level of their existence. I just loved. I was like, I remember just sitting there going, I want her to come to me when I'm going. Like when it's my time to die, I want that. I want Kirby to come to me and tell me it's going to be okay. She did such a great job.
Because there's this like negative connotation with death or the Grim Reaper. Because in a sense, she kind of is. But their job isn't to necessarily kill you. They're not a bad guy. They're there to like escort you to the next point.
She's the best of all of them, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the rest of them in the comics. All the other, you know, all of the dreams, sisters and
death,
siblings.
Desire, Delirium.
Destiny, Delirium. And Death is like the nicest, which of course I love it. You love the irony of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Death is actually the one with the most heart out of all of the other siblings, including Dream. So it is, Despair also. Despair is just a piece of work.
So is this show going to get a season 2 then?
I
hope so.
Okay, I don't know. I assume you both want one at this point.
Yes.
And big ups all the way to Gwendolyn Christie, who was terrific as Lucifer Moore. I've never seen her, you know, in many roles, really. It's just two big ones, you know, as Captain Phasma and also as Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones. And she just killed it as Lucifer. Mm. She's so she matched the tone of Dream and their battle. It was so amazing. And
so beautiful.
And well done from the comics. They really translated it well to the screen. And it, yeah. Oh,
because
so
she was, because Lucifer, it's Lucifer Morningstar is both like a bit of evil, but was also said to be the most beautiful angel of them all. The most loved by God. And so you expect, like, if you're the ruler of anything, there's a sense of poise and dignity, but also just this raw, like, evil in her. And, like, she's so calm about it that it's super unsettling, but it's so graceful at the same time. She's just a little bit of everything, and it works.
She's angelic. I mean, you know, she's angelic, which makes sense because that's what she was.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, and I love it because, look, if you talk about human beings, everything in us, we had to get from the gods. I think that's what I think Neil points out in this, and he's showing you that, look, you know, we judge ourselves and we get mad at ourselves, like, why can't we be better? But it's like, wait, where do we get these qualities anyway? And if it is from any kind of godlike whatever, well, then that godlike whatever had to have those qualities too. How could it give us something, she give us something, and it give us something that it didn't have? That's not possible, at least logic. And Neil explores that so well with the way this godlike set of siblings act.
And as of right now, we don't know if we're going to be getting a season 2. It hasn't been confirmed.
Come on,
Neil Gaiman
Netflix.
Himself tweeted out, Sandman season 1 dropped August 5th. The data harvesting is only finished and is complicated by a lot of people not binge watching it, but spreading it out, letting episodes sink in before watching the next. Telling Netflix to hurry up won't make decisions happen faster. So that was the thing. A lot of people weren't necessarily binge watching it right off the bat. They were kind of taking it in because BJ said, like, a lot of these have to do with humanity. And there's one episode that really kind of effed me up for a moment, but I had to kind of contain myself because I was on a plane. And it was the one with, I keep wanting to call him the Shame Wizard, because if you've watched Big Mouth, he also does the voice of the Shame Wizard. I think the Harry Potter guy, Theo David, no, David Thewlis, or however you say his last name.
Oh, right. He played the werewolf. He was also the big bad guy in the Wonder Woman first movie.
Yes.
The God of War.
Ares?
Ares, yeah. David Thewlis. I think that's how you say his name. He's a great British actor. He's terrific in everything he does. He was also in Fargo, in a season of Fargo. Mm-hmm. The guy is just amazing.
But he has a whole, basically, episode about what he thinks the world would be better off being. And it is so haunting, so sad, so real. It definitely, not a sitcom, but when you've ever seen a sitcom and you can tell that they didn't have a whole lot of money and they only stayed in one location the entire episode. I know there's a few episodes of Friends like that where the whole point was to stay in one location. He kind of has an episode like that where they have just one location and all this life, all these big scenes and moments happen within this one location. And it is so captivating and so messed up and so interesting. And yeah, I can definitely see why you might need a break after an episode like that. You're not going to binge watch the next one. You're like, oh, I need to watch what happens next. You're like, no, I need to process and digest this.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that. And again, I think Joy makes a good point. All of that can be very boring if you're just not into that stuff.
But it was just slow.
Yeah. I know. Like, that was actually, when you said it was slow, that was the episode I was thinking of. I'm like, yeah, I could definitely see what you mean.
Because they do time jump also for people who want to know in the first two episodes. So when you're slow and then you time jump, I'm kind of like, well, I'm not going to care about any of your characters. But anyways, I still think it was actually well done, though. I mean, the show itself, the acting was good. And the scenery and the CGI was great. So I was kind of like, if this was more my show and like a genre I actually enjoyed a lot, I would be watching it. But I understand why people like it. It does look beautiful. But moving on from that, BJ, let's get one quick comic, because behind the scenes, you mentioned that Will Wheaton is doing something in comics?
Yeah, Star Trek, it's hard to believe. IDW has been doing Star Trek books for a long, long time. And they just released their 400th Star Trek book. I'm assuming, I don't know if it's 400 issues of Star Trek, like a particular Star Trek itself, or just the fact that they've done 400 Star Trek books altogether. And they got Will Wheaton to actually write one of the issues. And if folks don't know, Will is a writer. He's written a lot of stuff, short stories, autobiographies, all sorts of stuff like that. And he wrote in this 400th issue, there's a lot of cool stories. And this is one of them. And it's awesome because if you watch Star Trek Picard, you realize in this last season that the Traveler, Will the Traveler, or Wesley, I should say, Wesley the Traveler did make an appearance. This is a great story about what Wesley has been up to as the Traveler. Leading right up to when we saw him show up in Picard. And I thought, well, that is cool. It's called A Matter of Choice. There's a lot of great stories in this 400th issue. If you're a Star Trek fan, IDW, you can get it on Comixology. But if not, still just get it for the Will story, because it is so well received. So many Trek fans were like, oh my God, that was a beautiful story. And how cool is it that Will gets to write the story of Wesley Crusher, that everybody just signed off on that and said, that's wonderful, go ahead and do it. And I mean, you know, for a guy like Will, who's just loved that character, and also the story arc of how that character was received back in the day, because there was no internet, but yet a lot of us Trek fans still found a way to say we hated Wesley Crusher. And Will definitely had to live through that, experience that, not, you know, along with what he was going on in his personal life with his family. All that was happening at the same time, and he turned that around like a phoenix rising from the ashes and has become a beloved person in the Star Trek universe, a true fan. And of course, now he hosts Ready Room and love what he does when he's because he's a big geek. He has a hard time keeping it together. He's so geeking out over the folks he's talking to. This is a great story. It's on IDW. It's the 400th issue of Star Trek, and it's so many great stories, including Will's Matter of Choice. A great, great story.
Will Wheaton is such a weird thing for me, because I grew up watching Next Gen when he was already loved again. So I never got that hate part. So it's so interesting to see how big he's become. I mean, really great success story.
Yeah, and that's the thing of all Star Trek. I laugh at all my friends who go, you know what, it's not like Next Gen, or it's not like Voyager, or it's not like Deep Space Nine, and I smile and go, I was with you guys. You all hated those shows when they first came up because they weren't like the original series. Yep. So people just forget how much they hate something until all of a sudden they realize, okay, maybe this isn't bad. And then all of a sudden they really love it. But, you know, all the hate for these shows for whatever, you know, for the reasons, certain reasons, you're like, really? Because that's what they said about Deep Space Nine. Everybody hated Deep Space Nine because it wasn't on a ship and it was too dark. And there's no way a Starfleet captain will do what that Sisko did where he allowed someone to die. And, you know, it's like, yeah, well, that's because they're being realistic. The world's not a pretty place. I don't think it ever will be a pretty place, but that doesn't mean that they still won't make amazing advances. So
I feel you.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. IDW Star Trek 400.
Well, if you guys have any shows, movies, anything that you've been watching lately, we've been trying to catch up. We want to hear from you, or anything that we should be watching. Let us know, or even reading. And until next time, stay nerdy.